If you're looking to boost your communication skills, build better habits, and connect with people on a different level, then the podcast is for you. It's a place where connection and communication meet coaching. I'm your host, Podge, a seasoned expert in health, leadership, and psychology. Each week, we'll dive into topics related to health with a keen focus on the art of building meaningful relationships through insightful interviews and practical advice. I believe that everyone has a great story to tell, and by learning from each other, we can not only enhance our own lives, but also strengthen our communities and how we connect with others. So I invite you to join me on this journey of connection and growth. Let's get started. Hello and welcome to Podcast Episode 5 on Bounce Back Ability and Dealing with Setbacks. I believe we have Jason is lining up also to jump in as we're about to get started. And now we have about 32 listeners, so welcome all. And Jason, how are you, sir?
GITD, thank God. It's just like, hey, I love this topic. I actually wrote a book course on it because my dad struggled with depression the last 25 years of his life and tried to hurt himself twice. So me seeing that, I thought it was very important that I learned about mental health and depression. So I read over 100 books since 2010 on health, wealth, wisdom, but also books like The Law of Happiness. Even Think and Grow Rich and Rich Dad, Poor Dad, with Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, Atomic Habits. A lot of these books explain the success, right? So I think that, the key part, nobody is really successful at doing something very hard or a big thing without the ability to bounce back from defeat. If you think about people like, Thomas Edison, 10,000 tries, he just said it was 10,000 ways. He learned not to create the light bulb, right? People that do things like the Wright brothers said they were crazy to want to fly a plane. There were other people that had the idea. This is a key thought. There were a lot of other people that had the idea of flying. But because of the discouragement, because of how many people say you're crazy when you have an idea like that, a big idea, because of how hard it is to bounce back after you fall, many of them did not do it. So when you see somebody invent something, they're not the first people that had the idea of doing something like that. Sometimes they are, but a lot of times it's that the other people just gave up, right? There are other people that even maybe had more knowledge, right, in schools, maybe some people that went a little bit further in terms of maybe academics, but the person that actually does it is a rebel because they have to say, when people say, no, don't do that, they have to say, yes, they're going to do that. When people say, you can't do that, you fell down so many times, they have to say, I'm going to get back up again. So it's really the key to success in life is your ability to bounce back. Most people learn to walk, right? But a lot of people don't get up when they fall. So you really have to study it and understand that it's part of the process to fall. Kids understand this. That's why we normally, most of us walk, right? It's not that we never fell. It's just we understand that falling is part of the process. But for instance, when we get older, we react differently to failure. And we're embarrassed. We don't want people to see us fail. Kids don't care who sees them fall. Most of the time, most of us have fallen off a bike and we still learn to ride. But as we get older, we change our orientation to falling down and failing. And we need to have the orientation that a kid has. Who cares if somebody saw me fall? I'm going to get up, back up again, and I'm going to...
Jason, you're just after timing out. I would love for you to be able to rejoin if you want to click on the guest button again, because I think you were providing us with some extremely valuable information, and you're about to jump in 2 seconds. So great to have you back.
Sure. So the reaction that adults have to failure in general, the difference between that and when you were a kid, that is not a good difference. You should not care who sees you fail. Right? Because the thing is, the problem with failing is the failure. It's not that people see you. Look, I had to sell my house and pay off debts at 33 in 2010. Okay, I had so much debt from doing these 100 Increase in Peace shows, and I couldn't get funding. I couldn't get people to, donate. I couldn't get a lot of supporters. I couldn't get sales. So I had a lot of debt, and I sold my house to pay it off. Now, who cares? The problem was losing my house and having to move in an apartment with my mom. It was my mom's house too. The problem was that I had to cause my mom and me to move in an apartment. That was the price. Who cares who sees me? But that's not how it was. I was like, oh, this is embarrassing. Like, you know, if some of my family was blaming me, you know, like the problem with failing is the failure. You don't get what you want. Who cares who sees you? But the fact that we add that we don't want to be seen to fail, this is what stops us from prevailing. Look, you know how many people are scared of speaking in public? You know, there's more fear related to speaking in public than dying. So people would either, in other words, people would rather be in the box than be the one speaking at the funeral. Can you imagine? Think about that. That there's, they would rather be in the box than to be the person that delivers the eulogy. Can you imagine? It makes no sense, right? So the thing is, we have to realize this is an impediment to our success. So look, I've been a teacher, you know, for a number of years, and now I teach online. The teacher says, you know, what's 5 plus 5? 30 students. Do you realize most of the time, nobody puts up their hand first? 5 plus 5. I'm like, you all are in grade 10. So this is ridiculous, right? Like, how come nobody puts up their hand? I said, like, we can't move on until somebody answers the question. Who cares if you say 8? I'll say, no, it's actually 10. That's how you learn. The key thing, you learn from answering. You don't learn from not answering. You learn how to speak better from speaking, not from listening to other people speak. You learn the wrong answer. The answer is wrong by trying to answer it. Can you imagine if you did that with everything? Somebody gives you a test. You're like, I'm not sure to answer, so I'm just going to stand here, sit here and look at all the questions. It's ridiculous. That's not how you win. You win from failing. And who cares who sees you fail? You just get back.
All right, Jason, we've timed out once again, and I'm definitely finding this incredibly valuable. So as always, if you want to click that guest button, we would definitely benefit from, keep learning from your expertise. As you are jumping in, I would love to know what you feel happens between childhood and adulthood that kind of gives us that fear of failure.
Yeah, for sure. So what happens is we start realizing that other people have the power to exclude us. Right. When you're a kid, you're oblivious to this. Right. At first, you're just playing in the playground. OK, so you're playing in the playground. Your parents just have you as you're by yourself. You're not thinking about whether people will approve of you. If you had good parents, your parents loved you. They approved of you anyway. They loved you anyway. Even if you messed up your toys or whatever, you might get a little bit disciplined, but they love you anyway. They don't lock the door and not let you inside. But other people do that. Okay, so if you brought up with, now I'm saying if your parents love you, now if your parents are abusive, that this caused a problem already. But if your parents loved you, right, they're helping you walk. They encourage you when you fall. They're like, oh, that's so cute. He took his first step. You know, that's so cute. And then you fall down. It's like, oh, that's so cute. They're loving you. They're not like, oh my gosh, you fell down and they start hitting you. No. They're like, this is progress. You took your first step and it's enough. But look, when you fall down when you're an adult, the kids in the playground or the kids laugh at you. This is when it starts. Because the wickedness of the other kids, it's not like your parents when you fall. They're like, oh, this is so cute. You know, they love you. They pick you up, right? But in the playground, the kids laugh at you. They're like, he always falls. Don't pick him for the team. He's always messing up. He doesn't kick well. Pick Susie. Susie's better. So this starts teaching us that, oh, if I don't kick well, if I don't play well, I'm not going to get picked for the team next time. The kids are going to make fun of me if I trip. They're going to laugh if I fall down. And we start realizing these people have the power to shame us. They have the power to blame us. They have the power to exclude us from the group. So Susie and John, no, me and Susie were going to go, you suck. You can stay over there. You're not going to play with us. And then we start feeling bad when we mess up because the other kids will exclude us. And we don't want to be excluded. So this is the thing, right? We don't want to be excluded. So to combat that, you have to have the confidence to walk alone. Leadership is lonely. I hear people say quotes that aren't true. They're like, oh, if you're just going, if nobody's following you, you're not a leader, you're just going for a walk. No, a leader is able to walk alone. You need confidence.
I really appreciate what you're saying regarding kind of as you do get older, there's almost like, yeah, the fear of being excluded. And I'm just trying to think about myself in that instance as well. There's been certain environments where you are not, like, setbacks aren't a normalized process, and kind of like what you said, the kids are just like, oh, don't pick that guy, you know, he can't do XYZ. And I'm just curious, and I'm trying to do like an internal thought myself, do I carry that into other environments? Because I have been in other environments since where people are very open to failure and wanting you to fail and then wanting you to get up and succeed again. So like good environments to be able to bounce back in. But now if I'm retroactively thinking about it, perhaps I am taking my past experiences and it's causing me to be fearful of failure and setbacks.
Work is not like that. If you really mess up at work, you get fired, right? Like if you really, like one of my first jobs was at McDonald's, right? So like, you were scared a little bit because when you start, you're like, well, what if I don't do these burgers right? You know what I'm saying? Like you could get fired, right? And especially when it's more consequential, when you're 16, it's one thing if you get fired. But look, think about it. When you're 26, if you're your first job, you get fired. You know, one of your first big jobs out of school and you get fired. This is not good because you go to another job, you're like, so what happened in that job? Oh, I got fired. No big deal. Of course, there's a lot of pressure, right? So you don't want to get fired, right? You get fired, what, your house get, you know, your car can get repossessed. I've gotten fired before. This is not something that is, you know, so this is a very consequential thing. Like, look, the top three things causes for depression. It has to do with a sense of loss. Okay, so loss of a job. My dad got depressed because he lost his job. And he drove taxi. And he thought it was going to be in between jobs. Ended up being the last 25 years of his life. He tried to kill himself twice. Okay, so because he had a nice auditor job. He had done his Bachelor of Commerce. He was esteemed as, you know, being so smart. They used to say he was the smartest guy on the island. He was going to be Prime Minister of Canada growing up in Antigua in the Caribbean, right? So he got scholarships. So they literally said he was like the smartest guy on the island. He got the most scholarships. He went to Canada on scholarship. So they said they're going to read about it in the paper. He was going to be Prime Minister of Canada. So he had this pressure. That's one thing. You have this pressure to succeed and to not fail. And people, like you said, some environments, they understand it's part of the process. But other things, it's like, no, you can't crash the ship. We're putting you in charge. If you crash the ship, it goes down, right? So like your manager leaves you in charge. It depends what kind of manager. It depends, right? Like if your parents leave you in charge, it depends. Are they going to leave you in charge again if you mess up? There's some things you don't get a second chance, right? Like, look, if you're a pilot, I don't care. You can't crash the plane and think it's going to be okay, right? So the thing is, there's some things you don't get a second chance. So because of that pressure, we're scared to try. So you really have to have somebody else help you analyze this. Because if you take into the there are some things, okay, you're a pilot, you can't crash a plane and just think it's okay. It's like, oh, well, you know, sometimes you crash, sometimes you don't, right? But you don't want to, in an environment where you need to fail, right, act like you're a pilot flying the plane. Mm-hmm. Because it's not like that in a lot of environments. The only way you're going to prevail is from failing, right? And some companies, they're good at doing this. Google.
If any of you were in my last chat or my last talk, you would have realized me asking you to help me keep me accountable to extend my guest time. I have failed. It is a setback, but I will definitely learn and increase that for the next time around.
Yeah. It's definitely okay, because that means you're sure to take a break. In a way, it's okay, because you can always speak in between the 3 minutes, and then you can have the person come back up. So what I would say, see, I made it easy for you to fail. Okay? So I forgot that too. So the thing is, right, you have to, when people condemn people when they fail, it causes a problem. Because the thing is, wait a minute, why are you doing that? Because the thing is, so what Google did is they set a place of policy. The company was really realized that how they're going to get new ideas if every idea the person has to prevail. You're not going to get a lot of ideas. For instance, brainstorming. You want people to throw out all of their ideas in terms of, like, say they're all of their ideas. You don't want to be like, okay, we're brainstorming. Only tell me if you have the best idea in the world. That's not how it works, right? It's from, and even when you come up with that ideas by yourself, it's from coming up with ideas that you keep getting, making your idea better and better and better. Okay, so the thing is, when I was 22, I decided to plan my career, and I realized, you know, I'd worked at Microsoft Canada as a co-op on scholarship, right? So I teach 7 biblical principles for life, the only 7 scholarships. And Bill Gates came and talked to us, and I said, if you can do that, I can do better. Now there's mindsets. When you're working a job, what I think is you should learn from the job, okay? So you should learn from the job, and I'm like, learn from the best. So, like, sometimes people are at a job, they're like, okay, I'm going to learn how to do the position well, and then I get promoted, right? But what's the highest position? President. So, like, if I'm at Microsoft, I'm not just learning so I can go back to work at Microsoft after I graduate, and I did get to go back. But I'm going to say, hey, I can do this too, right? I'm going to start my own company too, because I'm like, okay, like some people, they never think of it. But if you're at a company, you're not just learning from the people just above you. Who's the highest person, the president? So you want to see, how did they establish a company? What's the mindset? And then, you know, and there'll be people in between you that aren't down with the company's mindset, they're not with the founder, but you should be down with the company's mindset of the founder. Right. So I said, look, if Bill can do that, I can do better. I said, well, why don't people think like that? Mm-hmm. Because they come up with an idea and they cancel it out themselves. You've come up with great ideas to cancel it out yourself when you have to keep going. Right. And then I said, why don't people aspire highest? Because they think they can't. So I said, you should write down your goals. And they said, what's bigger than that? What's bigger than that? What's bigger than that? So I did that. I ended up having a goal to be prime minister, be president of my own company. Those are still my goals. Why don't people think like that? Because they don't think they can. They don't think like that. Because they actually, over time, they realize they could have had bigger goals. You want to do the opposite.
Jason, I'd love to hear your mindset around that, because I often kind of tell myself, if there's someone in a position that I admire, that position is attainable. And the reason I say that it's attainable is because if someone is doing it, you know, it's possible. And if someone is doing it, I am also capable of doing it as well.
Exactly. That's a good mindset. Well, what I've noticed is people, actually, the majority of people I've seen, like, sometimes they're spoken down to as a child, like somebody said they weren't smart, or somebody said that, or whatever the case is. Most of the time, we weren't number one in everything. So then they don't think they can. It's just like how the 40-minute mile was broken. At first, people weren't doing it. So people don't think they can because, you know, at first you can't. Okay, think about it. People don't think they can because at first you can't. That's how you start. You're just a little kid at first. You can't, right? Nobody's born a president or born a prime minister. Or, you know, so the thing, born running a company? No. At first you can't. But you should realize that, because there's been so many people that are like, oh, there used to be a thing in Canada where you got streamed. Like, there was a stream in school where they put you in a low stream where you can't actually go beyond a certain level, right? They're like, you do basic math. You're not smart enough to do advanced. You know, no, they put you in a basic. And then once the teacher labels you that, you're in that limited place for a long time. And then what I realized, I had people, or like one of my cousins, she's, you know, teacher supervisor now, but she was streamed in this low level just by one teacher. One teacher could just change your actual fate in a while, and then you have to go back. When you realize, wait a minute, I am smart, I am capable, I am capable of more, then you have to go back, and it's hard to go back, right? But then she did go back and she got the credits and then she ended up being so great. So this is a normal process that happens a lot. It might not be a teacher, it might be a parent, it might be a friend, it might be somebody, right? Well, it's not really your friend if they do that. But the thing is, this happens a lot, right? People pull you down. So then what you should recognize is people end up getting older and realize that, wait a minute, that was a lie. I am capable of more. And then they get ambitious and then they start to move up, even if they didn't do well in school, maybe. Then they realize, wait a minute, I am smarter than I thought. So I said, I have to make sure I don't set my goals too low. Because Les Brown said, it's not, the problem isn't that people set their goals too high. And people set their goals too high and miss. They set their goals too low and hit. So if you think about that, then you should write down your goals and say, wait a minute, have I limited myself? Should they be higher? And then I said, what's the logical? I said, well, forever being number one, forever being your, you know. So I said, my goal is eternal life. I said, you know, how do I do that? So that's how I found. I said a systematic process, found God. But either way, even if people don't believe in that, the thing is, you have to write down your dreams. Because I said, how long? How long do you want to do that, right? So I ended up retiring.
I think that's really true. And what I like about what you're saying, I know we mentioned about the being the president, and that's like an aspiration you have, but it's really personal to the individual, right? Everyone has different goals, and the conversation that we've been having leads me to believe that through certain environments and through certain interactions with people, like we can tend to naturally become risk averse and want to be safe, and that's the difficulty there. Then we don't recover as well from setbacks. We have more of a fixed view. Actually, what we were speaking to there was very much a growth mindset. Like I'm not, instead of saying I can't be a president, you're kind of saying like I'm not the president yet, but I have the capabilities and the mindset to pursue that goal. And I really do appreciate you jumping on, Jason, and providing like a very ambitious outlook in life, but also a very achievable one. It's almost like an invisible barrier that we're faced with, and we can get through it, but it really is more of a mindset thing than an actual physical barrier. If you do have any recommendations, Jason, you said you read 100 of books. If you want to just either DM me or hop back on just to provide recommendations for people, that would be wonderful. Mindset by Carol Dweck, I'm sure you've probably read that. If you're in this field, would be one that I recommend. But have you any others?
Best out of it. And the thing is, it was through failure why I started reading. Because when I was 33 and I cost my house, I said, I have to learn about wealth and things. So Think and Grow Rich, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, give you a good mindset for, you know, dealing with money. But specifically depression, because, you know, my dad struggled with depression. And I also at first went to the psych ward in university with two nervous breakdowns. So the one for depression, I think, is the Law of Happiness by Dr. Henry Cloud. The Law of Happiness. Dr. Henry C. Cloud has a lot of good books, but that's the one. But I would have to say, right, that after reading 100 books, I put together a book course that teaches all of the 7 principles that I think are universal, and it's called You're Gifted, So Think Freely, the course. And I set it up beginning with the end in mind that I would charge $100 after I spent $2,000-something in the pandemic, and I couldn't get any sales. And I said, well, it's a course. I paid $2,000-something for a course, and I made mine $100. But people are like, $100? It's a book? I said, no, it's a course. They're like, so because first they say, what I said is $100. They're like, why is it $100? Isn't it a book? And I'm like, no, it's a course. And then they're like, so why is it so cheap? So I'm like, which one is it? Is it too cheap or is it too expensive, right? But then I put it on sale for $20, so it's 80% off. But yeah, I basically took 25 years of my best work And I put questions after, because this is the thing. I said, look, I'm an educator, right? And I studied business and then I studied adult education. So I said, if I'm going to educate the world online, I went to Sheridan College after university, like when I was grown, right? 2015, in my 30s. And I said, I want to educate the world online. But I said, wait, if I'm going to educate people, have you ever gone to school where they didn't ask you any questions? No. You don't go to class and they don't ask you any questions. So I said, how come people write nonfiction books and they don't ask questions after? It doesn't make sense to me, right? And so, but now I realize because people don't want to answer the questions, do work, so like you get less sales. But I'm telling you that it makes sense to ask yourself questions when you're reading. And if you're going to write a book, put questions after. It becomes a course. You could charge more for it, okay? But not that many people buy it, because a lot of people, they don't want to do the work. They don't want to actually have to ask questions. You just want to sit there. You don't do as well at a school if they never ask you any questions. Go look for tests. Try to test yourself. It helps with retention and learning. That's what life is about, testing and getting it wrong and getting the right answer. So I would say your gifted soul Think Freely, the course is at thinkfreely.net. That's my 25-year.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jason. I'm going to go back. I'll listen to this again after, and I'll create a kind of a question or a post on Noom Vibe just with kind of the recommendations around bounce back ability and setbacks. I massively appreciate your time and your expertise in this area as well. And thank you for such a fruitful and really kind of deep conversation that I feel we need to have kind of with people around us, but also internally with ourselves as well. Even when you were speaking about just kind of go out there and do it, like one goal I have this year is to try and improve, you mentioned the public speaking, and that's a goal I have, is trying to improve my communication style. And some ways that I guess now I realize I do it is by forcing myself into tough situations, so such as Noom Vibe. And this is quite daunting for anyone to come on, and almost it's almost like a radio show or a podcast, but it really is the way you can learn. And I guess similarly in my life as well, I'm very athletic. Well, I have an athletic background, but I suppose notoriously kind of stiff just due to years of being in the gym. And one way I guess I wanted to come out of my comfort zone there is I did a yoga teacher training course to try and put myself under pressure to kind of change my body and my mindset when it comes to athletics. So I like what you're saying there. I think putting yourself in difficult situations is really a key way to learn. And another key way is just what you're doing is teaching others, I think, is a great way of reinforcing your own learning. And I'm sure it's helped you massively in this area too. So thank you. I really appreciate it. Appreciate your time, and happy to have you anytime as a guest. Speaking of which, we are up to 75 listeners, which is absolutely fantastic. For those who have joined late, I hope you're doing good. I hope you're doing well. Welcome to the podcast, episode 5. I am your host, Podge. I know what you're probably thinking. Oh, this arrogant guy, he's after naming a show after himself. This is crazy. Yeah, no, you're right. I am. No, I'm only joking. I'm definitely not. One, I did it for two reasons. One, I think it's hilarious that my name fits so nicely into in podcast. And then the second one is actually at Noom a few years ago, I did have a group of coaches who started something called a podcast internally, which actually went around and interviewed coaches of different roles and dove into certain aspects of coaching and coaching techniques. And I don't know, in a way, maybe we were preempting Noom Vibe, because we were doing this before, well, when Noom Vibe was originally Wisdom. So maybe we brought this into existence that Noom Vibe is here today, and it's a wonderful platform for us to all share our ideas, which we've just realized when Jason was coming on and providing us with brilliant knowledge. No matter where you are in the world, a good morning to you if you're in the US, a good evening to you if you're in Europe, and a late evening / night if you were back, or if you were in Australia or Asia. Jason, welcome back.
Hey, I really appreciate you. I hope you do a lot of these episodes, because I used to come on Wisdom when it was Wisdom every day, and I found there was not that many people coming up, so like I just started going other places, doing other things, because I just like I wanted people to come up, so I'm giving you what I wanted Because if you can't, you know, get what you want, you can give other people what they want. Okay. And I think one of the keys to success is they said, I think it was one of these great motivational speakers. He said, if you can, Jim Rohn, I think, if you can give more, the most, if you can give, do get good at giving people what they want, then you'll get what you want, right? So it's just maximize the amount of people you could serve in a sense, right? And then you're served in that and doing that. And this is already a result that I want, in that I get to have these conversations one-on-one, regardless of whether it's you that is the host or me as the host. It actually works better if you're the host, because, you know, like, you've already brought people, and then I get to come on. And so one thing I wanted to give is a nugget that I've learned after years, and I've been single for 46 years. So I've had a lot of time to read. When other people are taking that time and raising kids and things, I've had that time to read books, like my businesses are my kids, right? So what I realized is that most of us have had some kind of broken relationship. It might have been a friendship. It might have been, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, marriage, or whatever, right? So the thing is, what I realized is people are making decisions about who to walk with based upon their best foot. So what I mean by that is, people are drawn and attracted to people based upon their good qualities. But if you make a decision about somebody, walking with somebody based upon their good qualities, okay, serial killers have good qualities. Think about that. Serial killers have good qualities. Rapists have good qualities. Do you want your daughter choosing a guy because he has a great smile and he's really, you know, he really does a good job at dinner, holding open a door and open a chair, but in the nighttime he's a rapist? No, you can't choose people based on their good qualities, right? So if a job says, hey, we pay you $200,000, right? You're like, oh, that's so high paying. But like half of our people die at work. You're like, oh, wait a minute, okay, hold on. It's a $200,000 job, but I have a 50% chance of dying doing it. Well, yeah. So you can't choose, if you understand my point, you can't choose based on the good qualities. You have to choose on how bad the bad qualities are. Think about it.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think now how I kind of choose the people that I spend my time with. And I guess rather than, so I guess something like a smile could be quite endearing, but it's a little bit superficial on the surface. It's kind of more wondering about people's morals and values for me, and what they stand for in those aspects of their life as well. And one thing I love about this app is just like the communal feel. You know, I think it's really important for us to all get together and have dialogue and discourse and kind of chat together through these certain types of issues like we're talking about today, when it comes to the bounce back ability and recovering from setbacks as well.
So I'll put the context around that, because people haven't really heard this teaching on this, because I haven't seen other people teaching this, but I put my worst foot forward because I can't walk on one foot. If you put your best foot forward, as people get to know you, you get worse and worse and worse. If you put your worst foot forward, the people that accept you, then you get better and better and better. So, okay, I had four nervous breakdowns, went to the psych ward four times, same one as my dad, so it was generational. But I broke that generational curse in 2011, was the last time. So 1998, after my grandmother died, as in university, I went to the funeral, but I had so much stress coming back. I went to the psych ward, depression, to get out of, well, I was to get out of exams, but they kept me. I was committed in the same psych ward as my dad for 2 weeks. Then I came out, and I had to spend that semester, you know, just kind of, we had better write the exams at the end. And then 1999, again, after my Microsoft Canada work term, I had the idea of planning my whole career, blew my mind, literally went to the psych ward for 2 weeks, right? Same one as my dad, right, in Toronto. So other people went to university and it's like, ah, it was hard. I went to university, went to psych ward two times. I still graduated with distinction in 2001. Now, if people could say I brag because I graduated with distinction. I got highest marks in elementary school, high school scholarships, retired in the year at 45. But I just told you I went to the psych ward, right? I was number one on the team at Microsoft 2004, but it ended, I went to the psych ward, right? And then bounced back 2011. I was teaching at my church's Christian school. Great job teaching. There's a lot of people that are preaching there, never got to teach, but I got the full-time job teaching. I'm a teacher there. If I say as a teacher, the kids drove me crazy, I would actually not be exaggerating. I went to the psych ward in 2011, but I broke the generation curse. It was the fourth time. So now I've just told you the worst things that I was most ashamed of, right? Now, right when I came out and I had to get a job, I didn't tell them that in a job interview. So you have to think about context, okay? I'm not saying say that in a job interview. But what I'm saying is, if you actually get free of something that you've heard maybe millionaires and, you know, I could say other millionaires, because I sold my investment property for $1 million, invested in my company, right? They say help, but many times they failed and things like that, since it's prevailed, okay? So, like, you have to realize this is the key to success. And you really know you've made it when you can tell people what your failures were. I didn't say right when it came out, but that was like over 12 years ago now. So if you're judging me from what happened 12 years ago, a failure from 12 years ago, you're going to miss the 12 years of success, right? If somebody doesn't want to hire me because I failed 12 years ago, that's okay, right? But the thing is, you have to realize that now I've told you the worst thing, the worst things, my worst failures. So if you accept me and don't say, I'm not going to let him come again, he had nerves breaking down, went to the psych ward, right? He's crazy. Now, if you accept me, then I get better and better and better. And I know you're not going to exclude me because of my failures. You understand?
Yeah, it's kind of resonating with me. And the track I'm kind of following is that in a recent question posed here on Noom Vibe, it's asking like why are relationships so difficult? And the answer I gave is kind of relationships are like entropy. Like there's so much variables and so many things happening. Like you are changing and developing as a person, the person you're in the relationship with, or if it's like a group setting or a family setting, like everything is moving and everything is changing. And what you're saying there to me is about putting your bad foot forward. I don't think it's intentionally to go out and go, hi, I'm Podge, and here's all the worst things about me, you know, if it's straight off meeting someone. But what it is saying to me is, if you are trying to hide or be submissive to like certain aspects of your life, like you can't put on that front, you can't always be the happy Podge, or you can't, it's just impossible to put on a front always. You're always going to kind of end up coming back to being yourself. So it's about more being kind of transparent, maybe even more comfortable in who you are as a person, both like the good things and maybe the not so good things as well.
Yeah, for sure. And people always mitigate this when I say it, right? I'm telling you exactly what I said, and I'll give you an example, right? You don't have to mitigate it. Say, for instance, you only had one foot and you didn't have, your toes were missing on your left foot. Okay, so think about this. Imagine you date and you're saying, oh, you're transparent, but it doesn't come up if you have a left foot. You're doing online dating, right? I did online dating with my last ex. Okay, she was in Georgia, I was in Toronto. So online dating, you wouldn't ask the person to see her feet. Why would you do that? Okay, so it's not what you said. I'm not going to let you mitigate it. No, it's what I said. Don't mitigate it. It's not about being transparent. You can be transparent online dating for 3 months and your feet never come up. Okay. It would never come up. I would never ask somebody in an online dating, show me your feet. Okay. It doesn't come up. Trust me. I've been dating for a long time. Okay. I'm still not married. I'm waiting for marriage. Trust me. I was a senior administrator of over 15,000 Christian singles. It's not a dating question on any of the apps. Show me your feet, right? Do you have 2 feet? Right. So it does not come up. So you're transparent for 3 months. You answer all of her questions. It just doesn't happen to come up that you don't have toes on your left foot. So what happens if you keep getting together? Eventually you'll meet, and say she flies down to Antigua now, and I don't have toes on my left foot, and I fly her down to Antigua after 3 months, and I'm in Antigua, right? She's in New York or something. When I fly her down, and then maybe even with my shoes on, she still doesn't know. It's great. Right? She thinks she's going to marry me because she meets me at the airport. Everything's great, right? Like when I met my ex at the airport, hey, we embraced at the airport. It was great, okay? So then we finally go to the beach, and she's like, what? Where's your toes on your left foot? And I'm like, oh, that's my bad foot. My toes on my right foot are here. She's like, how come you didn't tell me? I'm like, you didn't ask. Mm-hmm. Okay? So don't mitigate it. You don't know the person unless you know. You don't know the person until you know what their worst foot is. You don't really know them. Now, she might say, well, why didn't you tell me? I'm like, you didn't ask. Why didn't you tell me? Because what, you think me, I'm getting on a date, you're going to not like it. She's like, but now I think you're not authentic. You're not, but it didn't come up. It didn't come up. This is what people do all the time. I've had exes do this to me, not with the foot, the physical example, but I'm telling you, what you should do is when you think you like the person, you want to walk with them, that's when you tell them you have no toes on your left foot. Before they see it. You understand?
Yeah, I like what you're after saying. There is, I suppose there is an initial period where you're trying to see if someone does kind of match your vibe, no pun intended, to the app. And then it is at that point, yeah, you should maybe disclose some more information regarding yourself to just, I guess it's like going to the next level to ensure that you're still a good fit at that stage as well. Jason, thank you again. You're really sharing a breath of knowledge here that I'm sure our 95 listeners, which is awesome. It would be really cool if we could get to 100. If you know a few people on Noom Vibe, tell them come over, because I've never got to 100 before.
Yeah.
Welcome back, Jason.
Think about this, how much better it is for me that I disclose that I went through depression and I went to the psych ward 4 times. Why would I want to have all these close friends that, and then they find out my past, and then half of them, I'll give you an example that it really happened. I was dating, talking to somebody for a few months years ago. And after a few months, when I was telling her that, you know, that my past was telling her I'm on vacation, and that time was on medication and things like that. And she said that her mother told her never to marry somebody that had mental health issues, because now I didn't have any impact. She liked me, how I acted. There was no impact. I had a good job, right? I had a house, everything. I had a car, house, good job, stable, good credit, everything, right? But my past, right? So the thing is, and it was years before, this was like at least like 7 years since I had the breakdown, or the last breakdown, 7 or 8 years, or almost 10 years, right? So the thing is, but because her brother could not speak, he had some kind of, he had an injury or something, and he could not, you know, speak properly, and he had to be taken care of by his mom for the rest of his life. So you realize there's different levels of mental illness, or like a lot of people maybe have been anxious or depressed a little bit, but there's a level where you can't function on your own. There's a bigger level than if you just, you see what I'm saying? So everybody's challenges are different and at different levels. Somebody could have diabetes and be blind and always need attention. And somebody can have diabetes and you don't even know. You see what I'm saying? Right? So the thing is, after a few months, I was in love, and it was so heartbreaking that she had that exclusionary factor. And then we broke up, okay? So the thing is, I said, this is not a good strategy to put my best foot forward, and then just over time, I don't want to keep falling in love and then having this thing that I can never change, my past. Think about it. If somebody has a criminal record and they're dating, why would you wait 3 months and then tell the person no? You have to have some conversations before you end up getting physical and all this stuff. And then, you know, you need to have some conversations and weed out the people that are not going to accept your past. Otherwise, you have all these fake relationships that just get worse and worse and worse. If you weed them out first, they get better and better and better.
Jason, I'm trying to see if we can tie this back to just our topic around bounce back ability and setbacks. It sounds like the relationships that we build and the environments that we're in, they need to have a good foundation for us to be able to be able to fail and to be able to not be risk averse and almost comfortable enough in ourselves to want to have lofty goals that we spoke to earlier, but also to know that it's okay to fail. You know, to fail is to be human, to be quite honest with you. They're just kind of some of the thoughts that are coming to my mind. Just as I look up here at the listener count, I see that we are at 100 listeners, which is absolutely fantastic. Welcome, welcome. We do have two guests, Jason. I see you're here, but Dio is actually a guest as well. And I'm going to just bring her on real quick too. Dio, welcome. It is great to have you here. How are you doing?
Yeah, thank you so much, Coach Podge. And I think, well, I'm guessing, are you in Europe like me?
I am, yes. I'm in Ireland at the moment.
Yeah, perfect. Which means that when I saw your talk, I was coming on early for me. I was like, great, I get to, you know, I get to have a chat that is in the afternoon for us, but, you know, of course, quite early for our American friends. And I think with the geographical differences, you know, I was inspired to come up when you spoke about failure. And yeah, I believe there's so much to be learned about not fearing failure and embracing failure. And I find sometimes that depending on the particular geography, the particular culture that someone is operating in, like sometimes there can be different cultural attitudes to failure. I think during education, the educational institution, different institutions also have a different attitude towards failure. And at least, you know, in my experience, I think education when I was younger, that absolutely shaped attitudes to failure. So, you know, whether somebody was learning within an environment where mistakes were almost sometimes encouraged and celebrated, and the focus was on congratulations for attempting, as opposed to, you know, I've been in other educational situations where you kind of didn't want to put your hand up and make a mistake because it was, you were kind of reprimanded and, you know, a bit humiliated. But yeah, but just to, you know, bring it back to the theme of, you know, dealing with setbacks and yeah, really embracing failure and not being afraid of it.
Yeah, I think when it's funny you mentioned the educational system, because I do, like, I was a teacher for a moment in time as well, and I remember when I was in school myself that we definitely had the, like, stop doing that, no, that's wrong, versus, like, keep trying. You know, that was my experience of it too, and I'm sure you have a saying, like, we have a saying here, and I know it's in the UK as well, as a like tall poppy syndrome, where some cultures, like I would say Irish culture in particular, kind of smaller town culture, if anyone tries to go like against the grain or tries to stand out, like the whole idea is they'd cut the tallest poppy to make them all the same size. And that's definitely something I realize that we have in Ireland anyway. I'm not sure about your experience with that.
Yeah, no, I could agree to that. And yeah, and I do wonder whether some of that, it is cultural, you know, perhaps within the UK and the British Isles where...
All right. That was just timed out. I'm just going to leave her back in. And Jason, I think you're still waiting to be a guest as well, so don't worry. Welcome back, Dio.
Yes, thank you. And yeah, no, it's definitely something I've experienced where I think it's great to teach us to reach for the stars, and especially in early years education where, you know, the mind is less limited, you know, this concept of limiting beliefs. And I believe a lot of limiting beliefs can get set in your really early years if you're being told you know, maybe I'm not great at certain things, or, you know, as she said. But yeah, I think I love the topic today, dealing with setbacks, because I think also, you know, I think when one looks over, you know, if I look over years and years of my life, like my time on this earth, there is a difference where sometimes with a major setback, and it could be, for example, I had friends that maybe they wanted to go to medical school, but they didn't get the grade, so they had to go back and do another year of education, you know. Or maybe I've been in setbacks where perhaps I joined a particular team within a company I was working for, and I thought it was going to be great, and it wasn't great. But I see a difference between sometimes some individuals that either never recover from setbacks. And when I say never recover, I'm not saying life stops, but they lose a lot of drive and a lot of zest, and they start operating from a very small, safe place. And I've seen this with, you know, people around me where every decision is made from a point of fear. Decisions are made from the point of, well, this could go wrong, that could go wrong, this could go wrong. So I'm going to approach this in the smallest way possible. And life just shrinks. And I've seen that. And conversely around me, I've seen people that have overcome major life setbacks. Something, a friend that maybe she wasn't planning on having a baby very young, but she did. But the approach and the bounce back just completely shaped the approach to life. So yeah, just to say, I think it's so interesting. I've seen people that either have never recovered or it's taken years. And a lot of that is sort of, it's the failure and, you know, and the devastation and I'm a failure. So I think, you know, I'll drop off now as the timer is ticking down, but this stuff, it's super important with life being a journey, you know, and hopefully we want these long lives of decades and decades. And yeah, we've got to have the bounce back ability.
I love that word. I actually, we got it from, I'm obviously a big footballer or a soccer fan. And I remember years ago, they kind of brought it back into existence. I just thought it was a funny word. When I was thinking of setbacks, it popped into my mind. So I thank you so much for jumping on. I really, really appreciate it. When you are talking, you mentioned there about people being fearful and they end up making, I'm trying to think of the exact phrasing, but smaller decisions isn't the word. But I do think understanding a fear in a decision is good. So a lot of the times at work, like I do have a framework, if I have to make a decision, I ask myself the question, what's at risk? So it allows me to think through the drawbacks with a certain decision, but I don't leave just the drawbacks make the decision for me. So I think the drawbacks are important as well as the positives. It helps paint a more full picture of whatever it is that you're trying to solve for. But I think if you're being driven solely by fear, then it's definitely not a good thing. But on the contrary, I think it's good to be aware of certain things that could possibly occur to. And thank you. I appreciate that you appreciate the topic. I can give you a bit of info into where my inspiration for the topic came. And as I mentioned, that I am a footballer or a soccer fan, and my beloved Arsenal Football Club, who are London based, if you're unaware, they suffered a demoralizing defeat at the hands of Aston Villa on Sunday. And it was in fact their first defeat of 2024. And we are now in April, which is absolutely astonishing not to have been defeated in the Premier League in that length of time. However, I noticed narratives around it or people online saying this was an enormous setback. They can't win a title. They won't win a title. Manchester City are like a juggernaut team who rarely make mistakes. It's their title now. And I just thought that narrative was so interesting that a team could be so good. I mean, like unbelievably good for 4 months, and then they have one setback and that's it. It's over, according, you know, in people's minds, like it's gone. And it just got me thinking how unnatural that is. Could you imagine if you're in a job now and you make, we'll say, a minor mistake, say you're like really high performer and I don't know what the mistake is. Like this is only small. You come in 5 minutes late for work one day and that's it. Like, it's over for you. Like you're never progressing anymore. Like that to me is just wild. And that was the same with that soccer game yesterday, just being wrote off instantly. And that just got me thinking into like the society that we live in and the fear of failure and how do we come back from those things. So that's really what sparked my kind of imagination and my interest in the topic today.
Hi, I would just love to chip in. I think you have a great imagination, and I wonder if we're psychically or maybe connecting through Noon Vibe. The example that you used about being late. It takes me back to, I was in education and I was interning, very large corporate company. And, you know, of course, and it was one of those that there's an internship. And if you do well, when you graduate, there might be a permanent job. So I was very invested. And I remembered one day I walked in and I just happened to walk past my supervisor's desk, a very senior director, and they had their notebook open on the desk. And it was purely one of those things where, you know, when your eyes just happen to catch something. So I wasn't walking around saying, I want to see what's on the desk. You know, your eyes sometimes just catch something. Mm-hmm. And I think I'd been working for quite a few months, maybe 6 months. And I saw that she had kept a log of every time I was late into the office. Oh. And it was small, like it was like Dial arrived 9:04. Dial arrived 9:03. So, you know, this lateness was, it was never more than 5 minutes, okay, of walking onto the floor, like micro amounts. And yeah, it's so interesting when you talk about, because it was, you used an example of lateness, and I understood, I felt I understood quite quickly that, well, this is going to be taken into account at performance, you know, at either the 6 month mark or the 12 month mark. It was a long internship of, you know, 12 months. And that did induce some fear, but I really just wanted to come up and share that because that was the example you had touched on. Say these things are real.
Did that have, like, it would have had an effect on probably your timeliness, number one, but I'm curious if it had effects on other aspects of your work as well.
Yes, I would say it did, because it focused around fear. And actually, I'm going to say, did it? It had a temporary effect on my timeliness, but longer term, it didn't actually. It did induce fear. I suppose today now the word would be anxiety. We didn't sort of have those words then, maybe, you know, 10 odd years ago. But yeah, it did induce a job related anxiety.
Oh, I'm trying to imagine myself in that situation. I don't know. I think would I be passive aggressive? I think I'd nearly purposely start coming in a little late, or else be like, I'm in now at 9:32. Make sure you log that. Oh, I'm only joking. Just a bit of fun. But my coaching lens and even my teaching lens just kind of getting me thinking of the environment that you do set up for failure is incredibly important. And I know something at Noom, and a lot of our coaches, if there's any listening here today, can definitely attest that for our Noomers, like, we do try set up an environment where, I'm not going to say failure is encouraged, but just that it's a safe environment, and we normalize failure. And if I can tie it back to a health related journey, like, it's most definitely a very, very important part. I don't think any of us have tried to achieve a health goal without hitting a setback at one point or many points or another. Thank you so much. I appreciate you sharing that. And that is kind of funny how I used the example that was so close to your real life experience as well. And I'm guessing you're not the only one, given that we have 117 people listening here, which is blowing my mind and absolutely fantastic. So thank you all for jumping in. We have Jason coming in one more time, and then I think I'm going to have to wrap it up and begin my day's work. But Jason, welcome back.
Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to leave this jam. I missed some of Dial, but I didn't really hear if Dial is still running Noom Vibe or if she sold it. But either way, you did know she's the founder of Wisdom, right?
Yes, correct.
Okay, good stuff. So I love it when she comes up. So I got out of line when she came up. So in terms of, like, you know, what I wanted to say is I missed some of it, but to leave, I think the most powerful thing is if you have a supportive community that can help you stick to your vision long term. So for instance, with that weight loss thing, My mother just called and I was just talking to her. She's 79 now. And there was a period of time when she was very, you know, not huge, but overweight for sure, visibly overweight. And the doctors said, you know, you have your ideal weight, not about looks, but health. And at first she struggled, but then she joined Weight Watchers and they had a good program. And, you know, you have to pay when you don't hit your goal. So because you have the incentive to not have to pay, right, it was helped. So they had a good system. So there's a lot of good systems. So that helped her. And for like over 20 years, actually 20 something years, she's been like ideal weight. Okay. So, but at first it took a while. So what I want to encourage everybody to have a long time frame so that you could succeed at a goal. So like, you might fail at first, but if you give yourself a longer time frame, like you don't just give yourself like 5 minutes to learn how to ride a bike, you fall off and then you quit and never try to get ride a bike again, right? So extending the time frame you have to hit a goal helps. So I remember this, keep this built, because I lead the Dream Decade Challenge, so it's 10 years, right? So I started in 2010 and I sold my house. I couldn't get into schools, right? But I bought another house in 2016. And then in the pandemic, I got let go from my job. I renovated it. And I sold that house at about for $512,000 for $1 million in 2022. So if I didn't have that long time frame, I could have been like, oh, the world is over. I lost my house at 33, right? But by 45, I sold my next house for $1 million. So the long time frame is what allowed me to succeed, right? And then you can be kind to yourself when you fail because you've given yourself a long time frame to prevail. So the Dream Decade Challenge, because Bill Gates' quote is this, most of us overestimate what we can do in 1 year and underestimate what we can do in 10 years. I have very few people that are willing to take the Dream Decade Challenge, but it's a key to have become a millionaire. Think about it.
Jason, that resonates so much with me. And I'm going to finish up on just an anecdote or a story from someone I have worked with here at Noom. Just before we close out, and I obviously won't disclose their correct name, but we'll for the sake of the story that we'll call her Laura. And it's amazing, and Noom coaches can definitely attest to this, that you always have clients or Noomers that will just remain with you forever. Like, they've gone through a journey and they really do stand out as like someone amazing. And generally it is because they go through setbacks and they have the ability to bounce back. And so for the purpose of story, we'll say I had a Noomer 5 years ago, actually. Whoa, the time is pushing on, I'm getting old. But 5 years ago, I had a Noomer called Laura come on to Noom, and I was her health coach at the time, or a goal specialist was the name of the role at that moment in time. And to be brief, when Laura came into Noom, I mean, it was funny, Jason, when you were speaking about relationships, like our relationship started off very resistant. There was a lot of kind of negative language, like I will never lose the weight that I need to lose. I have XYZ going on in my life. I'm overeating my calories. I mean, there was a host of areas to work on, and it was just that Laura was incredibly overwhelmed and frustrated. You know, it was kind of being directed at me on the app, but that's perfectly okay. And that's totally, that can be normal when people are on such a journey and feeling frustrated at the time. I remember we processed through, like we had many, many conversations, and it wasn't even about the goals that they wanted to achieve initially. You know, it was more of, like you're saying, Jason, long-term vision, like where do you want to be, what inspires you to get where you want to be. And the motivation for her was to be able to spend time with her kids and then her grandkids when she was older as well, and be able to move comfortably. So what I really loved about working with Laura is she came in incredibly resistant. She came in almost not believing that one, Noom was going to work, but more importantly that she didn't really believe in her own ability to achieve the goals that she wanted to achieve. So once we had our macro or our, like, super goal laid out, we had to process through the frustration first, and then we had to break down that long-term thinking into short-term goals, which at Noom we call SMART goals. So we can break them down. It really depends on the individual. Everyone is different. And what fascinated me about Laura was the language that she used. I worked with her for 2 years, but the language that she used changed over time, from like the "I can't" or I am not going to lose weight, I'm not going to improve, to okay, I think I can do this. Oh, I've seen a little benefit. Now I think I can do this. And it was just amazing to see, like, I know I can do this was the final type of language. And Laura lost, I believe it was 90 pounds, I think she lost in the year and a half, which that in itself blew my mind. And what I loved about it is she got over that fear of failure. She had the ability to bounce back. If you could see her weight chart, it wasn't linear. It wasn't going down all the time. It was fluctuating, which is completely, completely normal. But what happened was her mindset shifted. And in full transparency, Laura became, at the start, like, I found it so difficult to work with Laura, and she was frustrated. She probably found me difficult to work with, and she ended up becoming a Noomer and a person that I use in the story I'm using right now, that I've used forevermore, because I was just so impressed by her ability to be able to bounce back from setbacks, and to be able to change her mindset around that too. And I just thought that's a lovely anecdote, that even if you are frustrated now, you know, it's still possible, whichever goal you do have, it is still possible to achieve it as well, as long as you have the correct mindset, and as long as you normalize setbacks as well, and be able to bounce back. Just to close out the conversation, I do want you just to remember, every journey has bumps in the road. It's a totally normal process. But the difference between stopping and reaching your destination is how you do handle those bumps. This week, I encourage you to pick one setback you're facing and apply it to one of the many, many strategies that were discussed here by our wonderful guests, Dio and Jason. Just keep pushing forward, everyone, and you've got this, whatever your goals may be. So thank you so much. I appreciate you jumping in, and we will chat again tomorrow. Take care.